Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, readying information about a vast swath of happenings, including but not limited to the following.
A writer accuses a TriMet driver of texting while driving. A bear is to blame for a great deal of property damage, and a family of five survives a house explosion.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, September 2nd, 2010. A TriMet rider said a bus driver appeared to be using her cell phone to send text messages while she drove a bus full of passengers into downtown Portland. Surveillance video showed Christopher Todd confronting the driver and pointing to her hand where he said she was holding the phone, but the video does not confirm the allegation of text messaging. She was paying more attention to whatever she was doing down below than actually paying attention to the road, Todd said.
Down below.
Although TriMet equips its buses with surveillance, no cameras are pointed at the bus driver.
That's handy, isn't it, Dawn?
TriMet officials said the cameras exist for the sake of the safety of the passengers and operators, not for the monitoring of bus drivers. We manage operator behavior through training, direct contact, and ride-alongs with supervisors and feedback from our customers and the public, said Becky Witt, a TriMet spokeswoman.
Did Becky Witt actually at any point say that the driver wasn't doing it?
No.
Okay. Well, she didn't actually.
They just said that they didn't see it on a camera.
So that's one of those, which is sort of Bob Woodward would call a non-denial denial. I'm not saying that the driver was doing it. How do I know? I wasn't there. That's a thing. I am not privy to that information. But it didn't sound like she just flat out said, well, that's inconceivable. It's not possible. There's no way.
On the ride Saturday from Milwaukee to Portland, Todd said the driver started text messaging near the Ross Island Bridge and continued into downtown Portland. I knew she was texting, he said. I could just tell the way she wasn't paying attention. And I was thinking to myself, she's actually text messaging. There was a couple of times she even corrected to pull herself back when she was doing it. I'm not
what
sure.
Is that, what does that mean?
I don't know.
Wait, so
you'd
now,
have to ask Christopher Todd.
Well, so now we've gone from, this is how quickly my loyalty shifts. So moments ago I was all suspicious of the TriMet the TriMet folks just because of the press release or the statement that she put out, the public statement. But now we're to the guy saying, now he's saying he didn't actually see her texting, but he could tell that she was doing it because she wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, she was up to something, I guess, he's saying.
She could have been distracted by a bumblebee.
Yeah.
I mean, for all we know. All right.
Right. Okay. She could have been trying to tie her shoe with one hand.
I don't know. First I'm at one side, and then I was at another side, and now I'm just I'm completely bereft of loyalty altogether.
Maybe she was trying to solve a Rubik's Cube.
It's entirely possible.
Todd said he asked the driver about the text messaging, and she denied it. I said, what's that in your hand? And she said, that's my personal property. And I said, that's your cell phone. I can see it.
Okay, now I've quit caring about this story altogether because both of these people irritate me.
Yeah, all right.
All right, there you go. You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Don't forget, if you want to get this program on your mobile device, perhaps while operating a city-owned vehicle, you can do that at mobile.pdx.fm. Not that I'm actually telling you to do that, and that is for the benefit of any and all legal counsel who may be listening. Rick Emerson is not telling you to manipulate your phone in such a way so that you can receive this program while you are operating a bus, train, plane, automobile, hovercraft, or other vehicle. Mobile.pdx.fm, FM is where you find this program. You can also get it via iTunes and in archived form at pdx.fm or legionofnews.com later on in the broadcast day. Here is Dawn Taylor.
A Corbett man shot and killed a bear after it caused damage to at least two homes in the Columbia River Gorge. Two families living near Northeast Brower Road in Corbett told sheriff's deputies they initially suspected vandals had damaged their property. While they were relieved to hear it wasn't a person who broke into their homes, they're also unsettled to learn it was a black bear. For Daryl Martin, who lives in the area, a run-in with a black bear in Corbett is about as common as rush hour traffic in Portland.
Why's it got to be a black bear you're afraid of, huh? What's that all about?
I know. But why did they even have to specify the color of the bear?
As though it's only black bears that break into homes.
Exactly.
I mean, look, I don't want to judge. It's not my place to call somebody out for their beliefs or their outlook. But
Martin said they usually will walk through and go back up into the woods, and that's the last you see of them. 2 weeks ago, however, a black bear smashed the garage of one homeowner, according to Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. Martin said, I thought a gorilla got in there and tore it to hell.
Why's it got to be a gorilla, huh? What's that about?
I don't think he really thought it was a gorilla.
I know. I'm just trying to stir up trouble where none exists because I'm frustrated at my inability to take sides of the TriMet texting thing we just had.
A few days earlier, Martin's neighbor said a bear punched through a fiberglass shed while trying to reach fertilizer stored inside. Martin said one of his neighbors was worried about the safety of small pets and possibly people.
Possibly people.
I'm worried about the pets. Maybe people.
I suddenly like whoever this is. Whoever it is you're quoting there, he's a man after my own heart.
So he shot and killed the bear. That was the best thing to happen, said Martin, whose neighbor told him the bear weighed 230 pounds. And then Martin closed out his statements by saying, that bear was goofy.
I have to just say, speaking of goofy, I'm just saying this right now. You know, so Don and I have had these the conversations. We were first starting this show, and then when we do the second show, we do the Rick Emerson show at 1. And I would say that if you come in here, and I'm just saying you, but if somebody comes to do the program and they're in a bad mood, I always just...
Could be you.
It's not usually me, but on occasion.
No, I'm saying but I thought maybe you were talking to the people listening.
No. I'm just saying if somebody's here to do the show,
right,
and they're in some sort of a foul mood, you just got up on the wrong side of the bed, or you had some sort of a morning in which everything was just an ensnarled mess, you always just got to sort of admit that, because otherwise people will sort of sense it. If you're in a bad mood and you don't just sort of admit it, people will... They won't be able to really quantify what it is that feels weird about the show. But if you're in a bad mood, that'll sort of leak out over the airwaves. Today's not that day. You know what today is, though? Today's a mood where I feel like everybody has gone a little bit wacky. I feel... Maybe it's just me, but I don't think so. I think it's one of those
now,
days...
Now, there's only two of us in the room, so do you mean everyone out there?
There's crazy in the air today, is
okay.
What I'm saying. That's just my sense. Now, I don't have any actual proof of that as of yet. It's more just... It's a gut feeling. It's just a little bit of instinct that I have here. But I feel like there's a little bit of wackiness just sort of floating around in the ether today. So just everybody
be... I know, I'm feeling a little wacky myself, so who knows?
Like, for no readily apparent reason, I feel like I'm on the verge of the giggles at this very moment. Now, that's not going to happen because I'm a professional broadcaster, and I'm here to convey the news in a stentorian, authoritative fashion. But that's... It's just one of those things lurking just underneath the surface. All right, here's
We do have a message from the text box. Someone writes... I am a TriMet driver at work now, listening on my mobile device.
Good for you, sir. Well done. Rick Emerson Show salutes you. Legion of News salutes you. All of us do. Thank you.
Police said a man took a paramedic on a wild ride when he stole an ambulance from an Oklahoma City hospital.
By the way, that whole thing I said now about Legion of News and Rick Emerson saluting you for listening on your phone while driving a... That's just said... We mean that satirically. That's not a... I'm not actually advocating, condoning, promoting, endorsing, or encouraging that behavior. That's not a...
Well, as long as you're not endangering anyone, I'm fine with it.
That's Don Taylor, who's fine with it. Yeah. Rick Emerson is opposed to any and all violations of traffic laws or safety regulations. That's not a thing I can condone.
And me, I'm just a huge scofflaw. I just say, flaunt the laws, flout them, if you will.
Okay, that's Don Taylor, who is saying to do that. Rick Emerson is saying that you should obey all posted regulations, and you should do whatever it is that your job requires, legally speaking.
Screw the man. Do what makes you feel good. That's what I say.
Okay. Here's Don Taylor.
The ambulance was parked Monday at Integris West Medical Center in Oklahoma City. A paramedic was in the back when he suddenly felt the ambulance start moving. He thought his partner was behind the wheel until he received a call from his partner, who was standing outside watching the ambulance drive away. Police said 34-year-old Daniel Booth had jumped behind the wheel and taken off with the ambulance. The paramedic could not get to the front of the ambulance because of a partition, so he tried to get Booth to stop by beating on the glass and yelling at him. He also stayed on the phone with his partner, who in turn called police and gave them updates on where the ambulance was headed.
Wait, so there's a guy in the back of the ambulance, and the driver gets out, the driver is outside, and some guy jumps in the front to steal the ambulance, unaware that there was a guy, paramedic, still in the back.
Yes.
I didn't know those were separated. Why would there be a glass partition between... That didn't seem like it makes any sense.
Know.
It seems like you'd want to be able to have an all hands on deck situation. Like if you need if one guy has to be getting the defibrillators ready while the other guy says clear, and then the third guy says, "Don't let the bastard win," you know, or whatever.
I don't know.
And then a fourth person says, "Why?" That's just in my head, I guess. This is where the wackiness is already coming to the surface. It's rising up like a Gulfstream oil slick. Did you see that there was a...
Can I finish the story first?
Okay.
The officer started following the assault ambulance. Police said Booth, when he saw the cops were following him, turned around, went back to the hospital, parked, and the paramedic got out.
But was he then arrested?
Oh, yes.
So he saw the cops
following
him. He's
charged with kidnapping and larceny.
But I mean... Okay. So he stole...
Maybe he thought if he took it back, no one would be mad at him.
So he stole the ambulance, which by definition he knew was wrong, right? Because when he saw the man tailing him, he said, "Well, I guess I'll put it back." So he was fine with stealing the ambulance as long as nobody was going to have a problem with it, as long as it was sort of okay. All right.
Yeah.
It seems like if you've already stolen an ambulance...
Maybe he thought, hey, free ambulance, and he didn't realize till the cops were after him that, oh, wait.
It
belongs to someone.
It seems like if you're already going to be stealing something, that's Grand Theft Auto, so you might as well, I mean, what do you care if you just lam it? I mean, what is that, like another 5% on your sentence? I mean, what does it matter? I've heard tell that there was yet another, I can't even believe I'm saying this, that there was another, like, oil rig explosion in the Gulf this morning. There's some guys that went overboard and some guys that are missing. So we're going to look into that.
Okay.
This is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Federal health regulators are weighing restrictions on Robitussin, NyQuil, and other cough suppressants to curb cases of abuse that send thousands of people to the hospital each year. The FDA on Tuesday posted its review of dextromethorphan, an ingredient found in more than 100 over-the-counter medications that's sometimes abused for its euphoric effects. The practice, dubbed robo-tripping, involves taking more than 25 times the recommended dose of a cold medicine and is mainly associated with teenagers.
Robo-tripping sounds like a dance move that Alfonso Ribeiro would have done in like 1987 or something, you know, while pitching his breakdancing kit, which was basically just a piece of cardboard with his face on it, by the way, on late night television.
At high doses, the drug causes increased blood pressure, heart rate, and fever. Abusers can also suffer side effects from other ingredients mixed in cough medicines, such as acetaminophen, which can cause liver damage. Because of the drug's perceived safety, ease of availability, and desired psychoactive effects, it is sought after by those seeking to alter their mental state, states the FDA review. According to the FDA, inappropriate use of the ingredient was linked to nearly 8,000 emergency room visits in 2008. That was up more than 70% from reports in 2004. An FDA analysis concluded that dextromethorphan is abused less often than the popular painkiller codeine, but more often than pseudoephedrine, a cold medicine ingredient that can be processed into methamphetamine.
I'm so confused here. So people have used...
So we can't get Sudafed because people might be making meth with it, but we can buy, like, NyQuil and Robitussin, which apparently is abused more often by people.
Except it doesn't do anything, though. That's the thing.
Well, if you take 25 times the amount you're supposed to... Which would be like what? Would be like 6 bottles of NyQuil, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's like when you're one of those lab rats where they give you they force you to smoke like 700 cartons of cigarettes over the course of a day or something.
I believe this is another one of those stories that this is not really happening
the
way they say it's happening.
Well, I believe it's happening in the sense that I believe that teenagers and people in general, but specifically teenagers, because it's difficult for them. Because if you're a teenager, you don't really have the connections necessarily to go abuse yourself with actual real, like, legitimate hardcore drugs. In fact, there was a girl that I went to high school with, this girl named Kelly, who was just hot as balls, by the way. She was just unbelievably, she was kind of one of the first, I didn't know that they were called this at the time, but she was one of the first,
of the goths that I knew. And we didn't call them goths. I didn't hear that term until I think I was actually out of high school. That was some was a phrase that somehow hadn't made its way to Kennewick. So we just called them like new wave chicks or waver chicks or whatever. You would get into her car and you would hear this sort of very telltale, like plastic, sort of clinkety sound. And you'd look in the back, and her back seat would just be full of empty Robitussin bottles. Now, I believe at that time Robitussin actually had codeine in it. Now, I could be wrong about that, but I think that codeine was actually available. Like all methods of fun-seeking, it's been taken away from us by an overzealous government that wishes to make your life less interesting. But Robitussin, I believe, used to have codeine, and codeine is awesome. Let's have no illusions about that. Codeine is fantastic. I strongly recommend that you take that in massive amounts, as warranted by your physical condition and prescribed by a doctor.
Make sure you check with your physician first.
So she
Rick Emerson is not a licensed physician.
So... But she would do this. She didn't call it robo-tripping, but she did actually call
it... No one calls it that. That's a media thing.
Because that's gay sounding. But she did, in fact, she would call it robo, which I think everybody sort of did. Her thing was to get... And in retrospect, it was astonishing that I didn't recognize this as a bad idea. But we would be going to lunch or we'd be driving somewhere and she had her driver's license. And she would get into the car and decide to put down a whole bottle of Robo before she would, you know, before we go to the 7-Eleven. And I'm not sure why I continued to let her drive after doing that.
Because she was hot as balls.
I think it's because she was hot as balls. I think that is the explanation for most of my behavior, like even now. But she did this thing. And here's another thing that... only makes sense really in retrospect. At the time, I didn't know why I found it quite so alluring. She would actually take the cylindrical bottle and just place the entire thing into her mouth all at once, and then just kind of tip her head back, sort of like Jane Badler in V when she's eating a gerbil. But she would just, and you can sort of picture that, she would just sort of tilt her head back and then take this sort of phallic bottle and just stick the entire thing into her mouth and then just kind of like lean back, and it was just like a straight down the gullet sort of a thing, and she would just pound the entire bottle at once.
Wow, that's actually disgusting, though. I mean,
well, maybe
Robitussin. Robitussin is pretty gross.
Yeah, but
really.
But she didn't have to. But that's my thing. Is that like
right past the tongue?
Right, and that's so she would just like swallow it straight down. Like she would basically just shotgun a whole bottle of Robitussin. But again, that's because I think it had codeine. I mean, I don't think it's Robitussin, but I've taken like any of your an expectorant, anything that helps you quit coughing has dextromethorphan, which. The interesting thing about this, and I know we're doing another prolonged drug conversation, but that's just going to have to be okay with everybody.
This is PDX-FM. I think they're fine with it.
Perhaps we're just one of many such conversations happening today. But the thing about dextromethorphan is I read an article in, it was like the New York Times or something a couple years ago when they made the big switch to the fake Sudafed that like does nothing that they sell you now. Where they said that dextromethorphan, recent studies had actually shown that didn't do anything. I mean, it was just no better than a placebo. I question whether it has any effect, like hallucinogenic or otherwise. I'm pretty sure that it actually does nothing. The only reason NyQuil has any effect is because it's mainly just alcohol. I mean, NyQuil is basically like you're just drinking some backcountry hooch that a guy has made. I mean, it's just like moonshine, basically.
I guess somebody in the text box. They've limited the amount of Sudafed you can get with a prescription, but some of us can get giant prescription refills of Vicodin.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
No, it's true. Well, and the thing about getting the Sudafed is they do limit it with a prescription unless you happen to live in a place, right next door to Washington State, in which case you can just go buy it at the store.
Yeah.
Which I do, by the way. So there you go. Here's Don Taylor.
A Sioux City, Iowa family is lucky to be alive after they escaped what could have been a deadly explosion inside their home Tuesday night. In all, five members of the same family walked away unharmed after an explosion that shook their home off its foundation. Members of the Fung family know they're lucky to be alive. Megan McCann of Sioux City said, "All of a sudden, it sounded like an earthquake." Kendall Strand, another neighbor, said, "I thought that a car hit a house or something." But when neighbors walked outside at about 6:15 p.m. Tuesday, they said it was pretty clear it was an explosion. Kwong Fung says, who lived in the home, "Big boom and the ceiling fell down." Fung, his three children, and his mother-in-law were all inside the split foyer when it happened. They immediately ran outside the badly damaged home uninjured. Fung says a repairman was working on their furnace earlier in the day after he smelled gas. Kwong Fung now says, "And he fixed something, and before he left, he said, 'Everything's okay now.'"
And then, big boom, roof fall down.
Right.
Now, there's a certain clarity of thought there. There's a certain brevity.
Yes, a gas leak has not been ruled the official cause, but fire crews are still working to stabilize the wreckage.
That's great.
And find out what happens.
You know, I got that whole thing. What
big
is it?
Boom, and the roof fell down.
Isn't that a Pat Travers song? We're in the first week of September now, right?
Yes, we are.
So I got to do that. I have to get an oil furnace in my house, which is, you know, sort of, you know, that heats heats the whole place. And this actually just reminded me that I got to get it fixed, because I think the last time I turned on my furnace, which would have been, I don't know, maybe, because it was so goddamn cold, like way into the summer here. It must have been like May. And that might have been the last time I actually turned the furnace on, where I, you know, you have the thermostat where you turn it up to like 72 or whatever. And I turned it on, and, you know, you can hear the furnace kicking on in the basement, kind of going, you know, and it just starts blowing out the soothing warm air throughout the house.
With that smell of burning dust coming out of your ducts.
But which was kind of great, though, because I associate that with warmth. I associate with that.
It'll be warm soon. I can smell the burning dust mites.
And with protection from the elements and from the cool frigidity of Mother Nature. But the last time I turned on my heater, which would have been, again, about May of this year, I turned on the thermostat, and then there was just sort of a sound, and it just started to make this horrible grinding noise, and I could hear, it sounded like parts of the furnace were sort of just being taken apart and being fed into a rock tumbler.
Well, you rent, don't you?
Yes.
So that's not really your problem.
No, but it occurs to me,
another reason I don't own a house anymore, because if when something like that happens and you own a house,
you got to fix it yourself.
You just see big bags of dollar bills just being shoveled out the front door of your home.
No, it's like we've already got, I mean, it's, it, and I want to say that the guy who rents, you know, who owns our house from whom we rent, is actually really, really great. He's a great guy. And the house is actually wonderful. We have very few problems with it. But there have been a couple of things. We've been there for years now. So there have been, where it's like something goes sketchy with the toilet or the sink or whatever. And it really is the greatest feeling just to be able to pick up a phone and go, hey, it's me. Yeah, you need to come fix something. And then I just hang up the phone, and then he arrives, and it's all taken care of. My whole thing is, if we wait until we're into fall, then there's going to be like a 2-week backup for the furnace guy to come actually get to the house to fix it. And that's no good. So, all right. You are listening to Legion of News right here on PDX.FM. Don't forget, the program is available via iTunes later on today and in archived form at legionofnews.com or here at PDX.FM. Coming up at 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson radio program storms the airwaves via rickemerson.com. Today, we will be speaking with Ms. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. We've also got, those watches probably aren't current.
No.
I'm going to bluff my way through it. We'll have a rush coming up later on today. Also a watch as well. Plus we'll do
we'll have a snuff watch.
I have a snuff watch, really?
And we would have a monkey watch, except
if I had the
you
theme.
Still don't have the monkey watch.
I
got to
create something.
So I'm just going to have to read this story at some point just without it, or you're going to have to sit over there and make monkey noises.
I might. Here's the thing. If I can't get a monkey watch made by the time we go on the air today with the Rick Emerson Show, I will make monkey sounds in the background while you read that. I'll just give kind of thing.
Okay. We also have a penis watch.
It's more of a mogwai sound. And a penis watch coming up as well. Plus the top five, we will do because this was by request. Somebody actually requested that we do a debut album themed top five. So today, we have the top five first songs off a first album. I'm not talking about the single or the first release or their hit or the first song you heard. I'm talking about the first song. Side one, song one. For debut albums from bands. So first song, first album, first side. That'll be coming up today. Plus, we have a major guest announcement. I should just say it here.
Just say it here. Say it. We can say it.
So coming up Friday on the Rick Emerson radio program, it's actually going to be happening a little bit later in the afternoon than normal, so we're going to do this later on Friday afternoon. Then we'll play it back early next week. Dave Mustaine of Megadeth will be joining us here on the Rick Emerson Show. So Dave Mustaine from Megadeth.
Not here on the Rick Emerson Show, but here, over there.
Here,
on the Rick
there,
Emerson Show.
Not here, but, you know, on the Rick Emerson.
Yeah.
My voice will be intermingling with that of Dave Mustaine, and it'll be going out through a series of tubes to all of you. So on
but
the
it'll
Rick
be
Emerson
on the
show.
Other show, a different
yes.
show than this.
I'm handling it. I'm just trying to clarify that now.
Well, I didn't want them to think that they'd be coming in here and hearing the news. And
news
like,
with Dave Mustaine.
Dave Mustaine. Maybe he'll read the news.
No, I'm just,
if only that was true. If only we could actually swing that.
Hello, listeners. I've got some news. That's my bad sweating bullet sort of Dave Mustaine.
That was terrible.
Sort of, I know. I can't do that. You know, the key to singing like Dave Mustaine is just to, and I love Megadeth. I really do. The key to singing like Dave Mustaine is just to pretend as though your jaw has been wired shut. And you can't actually open your mouth. That's the way you do that. But anyway, she'll have more details about that. So Dave Mustaine, also sci-fi fantasy author Terry Brooks. So that's coming up in the immediate future on the Rick Emerson Show. So that's coming your way at 1 o'clock. You are listening to Legion of News, made possible by, among other folks, Castalia Language Center, a small private school in downtown Portland offering Spanish language classes for adults. And I think that, I don't know if you saw this email, but Cheryl has this idea, which is either great or terrible, you and I should be packed off to one of the Castalia Language Center classes to take Spanish, but which is all well and good, except that I think that she wants to film it, and then it'd be posted. It just seems like that's gonna go poorly.
Now,
somehow,
if we could just go and then take a couple of lessons and then come back and maybe try to have a conversation with each other in our rudimentary Spanish that we've just learned.
I just know it's going to be.
We could do that.
It's going to be one of those things where we're going to be, we're going to be sitting there in the closet and somebody's going to find an excuse to say, like, Lake Titicaca or something. And then it's just going to cut to us being kicked out into the hallway to think about what we've done and to ponder the error of our ways. Castalia Language Center is in downtown Portland. They offer Spanish language classes for adults. First of all, you can find out more at portlandspanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. Classes are limited to 8 students, and it is an environment for adults only. Now, obviously, Spanish language and a lot of language classes are offered, in high schools and throughout college. And if you are taking one of those, if you are somebody who is, enrolled in college class right now, or if you took Spanish in high school, one of the things you find out is that, it sounds so snarky, but they mean well, I'm sure. But a lot of times there's just too much stuff that they try to put into your head all at one time when you're taking a language class. And they try to give you the history of the countries involved and the history of the culture and the way the language developed and the way the language spread around the world and cultural customs. And so all of which is fascinating and interesting, but sometimes has very little to do with learning the language. And so you get to the end of your senior year in high school and you realize that you should have been learning Spanish the whole time and you really didn't. You can't really use it in conversation. That is the difference between in traditional language classes in a place like Castalia Language Center. Classes are limited to 8 students. The class is for adults, which means that everybody's kind of learning in the same way and at the same rate, at the same speed. And teachers are professional, but it's a friendly, relaxed environment. You can find out more about it at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. Castalia Language Sponsor, a proud sponsor of the Emerson News Network and Legion of News. Speaking of Legion of News, at the Legion of News desk, it's Dawn Taylor.
Dave Mustaine, es el cantante de Megadeth.
Is he the singer for?
Yes.
All right. See how I figured that out right there? Bam.
You told me I should do a Spanish phrase every day.
Was that via Babel or something?
That was Google Translate.
All right.
You can type in anything and it will translate. So if you have something you'd like me to translate to Spanish for you later, let me know.
Please don't do that.
Okay.
Here's Dawn Taylor.
Let's do the science news.
Science is on the march via Legion of News right here at PDX.fm.
Apple CEO Steve Jobs took the stage yesterday morning in San Francisco, eager to share with the world the latest news on his company's notorious hobby project, the Apple TV. After an original generation, 4 years of neglect, poor sales, and little innovation, the set-top box that plugs directly into a TV is getting a major overhaul. And unlike the company's other tentpole product launches, like the iPod, the iPhone, the iPad, the Apple TV is rolling out of the production lines primed for mainstream acceptance. Its $99 price point is low by Apple's standards, and it's equipped to sync with Netflix, ABC, and Fox. It's not amateur hour, as Jobs put it. It comes ready for professionally produced Hollywood content, just like the average Joe consumer likes it. When the iPod was first introduced on October 23, 2001, it went on the market for $399, meaning only the very early adopters who were willing to take a risk on Apple's then untested MP3 player were there to jump on board. With the iPhone, it was the same thing. Early adopters flocked to Apple stores to pick up the early 4G or 8G, 4GB or 8GB versions, which sold for $499 and $599 respectively. From there, they went into the world showing the revolutionary device off to friends at the bar. People adopted, people picked it up, and the price dropped in 2008 with the 3G model, and mass market adoption followed. So unlike with that, they're now bringing out the Apple TV, ostensibly for $99.
Well, that's the thing. So it's existed for a couple of years, but I think we were talking about this yesterday. I don't even really know what it does. And I'm not really, me asking for people to send me long sort of treatises about what it does. It doesn't really matter. But they're doing this sort of Microsoft thing, because Microsoft has this approach, which has actually worked out pretty well for them, just this kind of war of inches strategy, where Microsoft will, I want to say that Microsoft never gets rid of anything, that they don't ever cancel the product line, because they have. It's not like they keep putting out new versions of Microsoft Bob trying to get people to buy it or something. But Microsoft we'll just put something out on the market, like, as soon as it sort of works. Like, as soon as they can kind of get it to plug into a wall and it lights up or it makes a whirring sound, like, they say, good to go, package it, ship it. They're sort of the Ed Wood, you know, software and of product design in that way. And then they will just endlessly upgrade the thing until it eventually... You know what Microsoft products are? Microsoft products are like that guy who is... When you're trying to park, like you're in the Pearl District and you're going to Powell's or something, and you're trying to park and you can't because there's some guy standing in a parking space saving it for his friend. And his friend is not going to be there for a couple of minutes, but but his buddy is just standing there in the street holding the space for him so that you cannot park there. That's what the first generation of every Microsoft product is. You know, like when you buy the first Zune, and then you get home and you find out that it's basically just full of dirt. Like, it doesn't even work. You know, it's just, you know, but it's just there, so you've got it in your house. And that is then the crowbar with which they pry open your wallet and your customer loyalty to give you, like, the version 2 and 3 and 5. And then they'll get to Zune version, like, 74. And that's the one that finally works. That's what they did with Windows. But so Apple's doing this with the iTV,
right? And it's Apple TV, and it's essentially, if you don't know what a set top
is, it called Apple TV or iTV?
Apple TV.
All right.
If you don't know what like the what do they call it, the set top box thing is, it's like a boxy. Google is coming out with one. There's a couple that are actually on their way. Google TV Box, the Roku, and they're basically just little hard drives that are designed to sort of get the information from your computer to your television, from the internet to the TV. It could go like directly through the air. It's like instead of watching all this crap on your TV, on your computer, or watching it or looking for it on your computer and then plugging your computer into your TV, it's basically it just does it for you.
So this is it's like some sort of matchmaking device between your computer and your television?
Between your television and the internet. And the thing is that with the Apple TV, tech writer Matt Burns wrote an article on Crunch Gear, and he said Apple TV isn't for pirates, it's for parents. And basically it's, and that's another reason it's $99, it's for people who want online content but don't want to have to like go through the trouble of looking for it. Or who don't want to download stuff illegally, don't understand how to use torrent sites. It's basically all of the stuff that you can see on Hulu, on Netflix,
right,
on the different channels. It sort of corrals it in one place for you.
I mean, far be it for me to bet against Apple or whatever, but it seems like this is I'm not going to say it's too little too late, but it does seem like it is very little and very late because my Xbox has been doing all of that stuff for like 2 years.
Well, it's the next step towards basically us watching everything via computer and TV and getting rid of like broadcast and cable entirely. You know,
well, I guess, except it's not really the next step though, because like the next, in other words, if it were the next step, it would do something that I can't already do.
Well, it's the next step in that it's like, say, this is for your mom. Let me put it this way. This is for somebody who doesn't want a game system, somebody who doesn't understand,
I guess that's maybe the way to do it.
How to download content.
That might actually be, that might be why it is. They might be trying to go for the non-gamer market. Because,
yeah,
you know, my wife is, I mean, you know, not that my wife isn't bright, but she's, you know, she's not some tech nerd. But, you know, I can't remember the last time my wife watched something that was not delivered to her via the Xbox in one way or the other. Because my wife's Mac hooks to the Xbox. Netflix goes right to our Xbox. I think Hulu goes right to the Xbox, but I could be wrong about that. Amazon goes directly to our Xbox and to our TiVo. So she sort of watches everything via the TiVo or via the Xbox. And now, to be fair, though, my wife games a lot, though. She's on the Xbox as a gamer, which is why she's familiar with all that stuff, whereas my mom, not so much. So that probably is the difference, then. And because the only other alternative, the only way that they could do something, they do like an end run around the Xbox, would be to create their own game system. And Apple will never create a game system for your home because somebody already created the Apple game system, which is called the Wii. Yep. So, all right.
Well, in his presentation on Wednesday, Jobs said, consumers don't want a computer on their TV. They have computers. They go to their widescreen TVs for entertainment, not to have another computer. This is a hard one for people in the computer industry to understand, but it's really easy for consumers to understand. They get it.
All right. There you go. So there's that.
To most human males, the thought of your mother anywhere near your sex life is probably horrifying. Not so for the bonobo, one of our closest primate relatives. A new study confirms that hanging out with mom boosts male bonobos' chances of getting intimate with a fertile female. The study found that when their mothers are around, low to mid-ranking bonobo males get more opportunities to mate. Mothers facilitated sons' presence in their social circle, so they were able to interact with more females. And they also chased away rival males who might try to break up their sons' blooming relationships. The mothers aren't just busybodies, say researchers. In fact, taking an active interest in their sons' love lives helps mothers pass on their own genes. If they support their sons, they can have more grandkids, said study researcher Martin Serbeck, a biologist at the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology in Germany. So there you go.
I love the idea that if there, what is it called, the bonobo?
The bonobo.
All right. Well, that is just more proof that we are in that we are closely related to that our primate brothers are really that they're all somewhere between a figurative and literal brother, because that's. It sounds like the mom basically just hangs around and chases off chicks that she doesn't think are worthy of your time.
Right.
You know,
and tries to set you up with nice ladies.
Why don't you go out with that Meyer girl? All right. Instead of that Shiksa you've been dating. All right. So there's a, and it also sounds as though if the male, what is it? Is it a monkey or a chimp or what is
an
it?
Ape.
It's an ape. So if the male ape is hanging out with the mom, then it makes it more desirable to female apes, which is, of course, a thing that you see all the. If you were to, if you were to see two guys on the street, both of them, let's say, firefighters. One guy was off to go drink at the bar with his friends. One guy was off to take care of his aged and saintly mother. You would, of course, be more attracted to the firefighter who was going to take care of his aged and saintly mother. That's just a given. So, there you go.
Explosives have been used to put down a sickly humpback whale, which washed up onto a sandbar off Western Australia's southwest coast.
I think I know how the story ends.
The humpback whale became stranded in Albany in Western Australia's southwest 2 weeks ago. The Department of Environment and Conservation had intended to let the whale die of natural causes, but on Thursday decided to euthanize the animal with an explosive charge after it repositioned itself on a sandbar.
That is how I want to go. Like, if I'm ever in a hospice or something, or I've got the cancer or the whatever, I just want them to blow me up. Right in the middle of downtown Portland, maybe on a float. You put me on some sort of a
barge.
One of those big rolling balls of Kleenex that goes through town. Like in the children's parade for the Rose Festival.
There you go.
Right there, you know, and so I can turn, hello, kids, and I can wave. And then they can all be showered with little bits of rictitritis.
For a number of years, I used to think that if I ever decided to commit suicide, I would do it by blowing my brains out in the middle of Disney's It's a Small World ride. Just stand up in the middle of the ride in the boat and just, shoot myself in the head.
I don't even really know that that would be a point of distinction on that ride, though, because I think about half the people who go through the thing go crazy at some point during the experience.
In a statement, DEC District Manager Mike Shepard said that the whale had moved a couple of meters from its original position, which was enough to stabilize the whale and kill it humanely. This was not an option that was available to us until now, as the animal, even while terminally sick, was still strong enough to present a safety risk.
So, in other words,
got sick enough it couldn't fight back, so we could blow it up.
We could blow it up. Did they explain exactly what they talked when they said you're killing the whale with an explosive charge?
Not really, but they blew it up in some fashion.
I'm just picturing a sort of, just like a suicide bomber, which is wearing the dynamite belt.
Neither in Oregon know what it's like when you blow up a whale.
You would think, you would think that would have gone viral enough at this point that everybody would stop and give it a good, like a second thought and a 50th thought and a 90th thought before they decided
to do it. It was a very small charge and it was just like right next to its head.
I wonder if they had to call one of those guys who sort of collapses buildings. One of those guys who, knows how to do the shaped explosion or whatever. And if he thought it was like a gag, we're going to implode a whale. If it took a while to convince them that they were sort of on the level. Is that science?
That's all the science.
All right, there you go. Here's your... Once you get to the exploding whale, that really is the end of that particular road, I think.
Yeah, that's
all right, fantastic.
Kind of done.
Here is Don Taylor as we continue Legion of News at PDX.fm.
Detectives have asked the public for information about what killed a Northeast Portland man earlier this month. Portland police said Jason Doering was found lying on a sidewalk near Southeast 84th Avenue and Foster Road on August 15th. He was taken to OHSU Hospital, where he died of massive head trauma. An autopsy didn't determine how the man was injured, detectives said, and the death is considered suspicious. A former girlfriend of Doering's, who wanted to remain anonymous, said she believes he was likely murdered. I believe there are people out there who definitely, ultimately know what happened to him, she said. I don't think anybody deserves to die the way he did, and I think somebody needs to be brought to justice for what they did to him.
And this is who?
This is an anonymous girlfriend.
No, but who's the guy that is dead?
His name's Jason Doering.
All right. I don't mean to sound. I don't mean to sound this way. So, is this a death of some note?
No. Well, he back on August 15th, the guy was found. I believe we actually reported on this, right? Guy was found. He'd been bashed in the head somehow, and they don't know exactly who or what killed him. So now, basically, it's one of those things. The cops are going,
we got nothing.
We got nothing. Anybody know anything?
I think, and I'm just.
Am I buzzing a little bit when I talk?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I think it's just in your head. Maybe you have a feeling that's coming loose.
Maybe.
I think that it's probably a lot easier to get away with murder than most people think. I think if you, just because there's so many of them committed, I mean, not necessarily important, Portland as such, but I mean, it's everywhere. I think it's probably so much, there's so many killings that happen on a daily basis in this country. If you're just a couple of shades smarter than the average moron, I would say you got like a 50-50 chance of snuffing a guy and not getting him. I mean, you know, unless it was a thing where you were at a bar the night before going, and then I'm going to kill him, and then I'm going to, you know, and then I'm going to jump up and down on his corpse, and then I'm going to kick him into the river, and then I'm going to, if it's a thing that you haven't really told anybody about, or if it's a thing that you don't do while you're blind drunk, you could probably kill somebody, and I would say you'd have a 50-50 chance of getting away with it.
Well, I've mentioned this to you before. I set up some Google alerts on certain phrases and words, and one of the phrases was human remains. And every single day, it brings me like 8 or 10 news stories in which from around the country where somebody has found body parts somewhere. You know, there are a remarkable number of just dead bodies lying around and bones, you know, at the bottoms of rivers.
Percentage wise, I wonder how many murders in this country are solved. I mean, of murders that. And I'm not talking about where, like, a guy vanishes and nobody notices he's gone. Like, you're just going to kill some, you know, so you're going to kill some bum, you know, somewhere that nobody's even going to miss. You know, but if somebody just, hey, wasn't Bob here a while ago? Yeah, now he's gone. What's that about? It, you know, where a guy, somebody vanishes and people notice that he's gone, mm-hmm. and it turns out that, you know, but he has been murdered, whether or not they figure that out. How many of those are solved? And I would guess the number is no. I would say it's no more than 60%. I mean, at the absolute maximum, I would say that 60% of murders maybe are solved in this country.
I have no idea, but I think you could be right.
Here's Don Taylor, the Legion of News news desk.
Staten, Oregon police arrested a man Wednesday after a report of kidnapping and rape. Detectives said 31-year-old Douglas Gillis, who lives in Elmsville, kidnapped a 19-year-old woman Tuesday and took her to a secluded location. There, police said Gillis forced the victim to have sex with him. Staten officers said Gillis and the woman knew each other prior to the rape. They arrested him at his home at 4:30 p.m. Wednesday. Gillis is being held in the Marion County Jail on charges of kidnapping, rape, sodomy, and sex abuse. And I gotta say, he doesn't look like you'd think he would. He looks like your prototypical basement gamer.
I was just going to say that he has really dead eyes, though.
He has World of Warcraft written all over his face.
No, he does. He has sort of a ninth level mage kind of a thing going on. I don't know what's up with his shirt, though. I think this shirt may be something that is like part of the rest of his LARPing gear, where he kind of puts this on, and then there's maybe a cloak that's supposed to be attached to it or something. Yeah. Yeah, he has kind of a private pile thing going on there. So, all right. That's unfortunate.
He's unfortunate.
All right.
An offshore petroleum platform exploded. We were talking about this earlier, I believe. Offshore petroleum platform exploded and was burning today in the Gulf of Mexico, about 80 miles off the Louisiana coast, west of the site where BP's undersea well spilled after a rig explosion. The Coast Guard said no one was killed in the blast, which was reported by a commercial helicopter flying over the air this morning.
It's almost as though that technology is inherently unstable and maybe should be moved away from, and we should find some different way to maybe, you know, get dead dinosaurs out of the ocean floor if we're going to insist on doing that.
All 13 people aboard the rig have been accounted for with one injury. The extent of the injury was not known. Coast Guard Commander Sherry Ben Isau said some of those from the rig were spotted in emergency flotation devices. 7 Coast Guard helicopters, 2 airplanes, and 3 cutters were dispatched to the scene from New Orleans, Houston, and Mobile, Alabama. Authorities do not know whether oil was leaking from the site.
Did you say, this may have been at the top of the story, did you say what company this was? Like who?
It's a Deepwater Horizon rig. Is it?
Is Deepwater Horizon the name of the company?
They lease their stuff to BP.
Okay, so but
yeah, it was a Deepwater Horizon rig leased by BP.
Okay, wow.
And it was in about 5,000 feet of water when it exploded. No, wait, this is one that exploded and sank in April. That's the one that did. No, they don't say who this one.
So we don't know what oil company, in other words, because
this is not the Deepwater Horizon.
It would almost be too perfect if this was. It'd be too perfect if this was like another BP thing, because it's just. Right. That has got to be one of those jobs that either pays almost nothing or pays incredibly well if you're a guy who's working on one of those oil rigs. Because there's certain jobs that are, you know, they're risky and they're dangerous and they're whatever, but they also don't pay very well, and they end up being taken by guys who basically just, you know, like they're qualified for that and kind of nothing else. Or it's a job that pays incredibly well because it's dangerous and, you know, and it reeks and you could get killed and nobody wants to do it.
It was owned by Mariner Energy of Houston.
Okay.
And speaking of BP, by all appearances, the BP ruptured oil well is no longer leaking, but there's still concerns about the oil that made its way into the water and onto the shore after the massive spill. Gulf Coast residents are finding a unique way to track it, and it's as simple as picking up an iPhone, Android, or BlackBerry device. Through the Map the Spill phone app, users can send a video, photos, and text to document oil they find and see it displayed on an online map. Trimble Outdoors developed the app, and spokesman Chris Wagner says even though the oil is no longer gushing, people are still finding oil.
We've actually seen a pickup in posts being posted at mapthespill.org since, you know, the cap was put on. So we're expecting it to continue for several years, and we'll support it.
I enjoy the crispness of his voice. I find him to have a pleasing delivery.
I like his optimism, too. It's like, hey, we're going to be seeing lots of oil for years to come. Well, so our app is useful.
What does he care? No, he probably that's one of those things where you turn on the television and you see like there's a second oil derrick or whatever has exploded, and he's just, you know, he just takes the rest of the day off and goes fishing or something.
Wagner says the information is available to the public, and scientists are also looking at the data.
There's never going to be enough scientists or journalists on the field to cover the miles and miles of shoreline in the seas that have been affected.
Wagner said they wanted to give a voice to residents who still have concerns.
Trying to create a place where people can, you know, share the data, share the impacts of the oil spill. And the most valuable part is it doesn't become part of a black hole.
All right. What? Never mind. I don't even want to know what he's talking about there. That's one of those things where I think he may have revealed too much. You're listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Don't forget the Rick Emerson program comes up at 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com today. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian will be joining us. We've got a penis watch, monkey watch, snuff watch as well. And we'll do today's top five first songs off a first album from a band. Song one, side one, for first album by a band. That is on the way at 1 o'clock. If you are a Rick Emerson subscriber, that's when that begins, over at rickemerson.com. If you are not a Rick Emerson subscriber, you've heard us talk about the Rick Emerson Grant. The Emerson Grant, which is done in partnership with our good friends at New Millennium Landscape and Maintenance, where they specialize in nuisance abatement solutions for your neighborhood or home. They do maintenance, landscaping, and what my mom used to call busy work outside in your lawn. So they help take care of all of that stuff, and they're helping to provide the Emerson Grant, which is 10 one-month subscriptions to the Rick Emerson Show that are awarded every month. So you've heard us talk about the YouTube way of submitting your entry. So if it's you or somebody you know who you believe ought to receive a one-month subscription to the Rick Emerson Show, you can say that you can film a YouTube video of no more than 2 minutes in length, and you send that to video@rickemerson.com. And Don and I were talking about this, that we were wanting to give people an alternate way to do it, a way that didn't, so you're not having to just like sit there and do, you know, like sort of, you know, like endless takes in front of your webcam or whatever. So we actually are going to be tomorrow announcing an alternate method for you to do that. Will involve leaving us a voicemail. So we'll have information about that tomorrow. You'll be able to leave us a voicemail, and we're going to be giving away 10 of those every month, courtesy of New Millennium Landscape and Maintenance. So be listening for more information on the Emerson Grant tomorrow and an alternate way to submit the name of yourself or someone you might know. In the meantime, you can find out more at rickemerson.com. This is Don Taylor.
Let's do entertainment news.
Fantastic.
Entertainment news for Thursday, Legion of News.
Grammy-winning rapper T.I. was arrested along with his wife on suspicion of possessing methamphetamines 5 months after the hip-hop star finished a prison stint on weapons charges.
If only I had some sort of immediate auto-tune function on my computer right now, I'd just be auto-tuning your whole thing while you talked.
The 29-year-old rapper and his wife, Tamika Cottle, were arrested Wednesday night in West Hollywood after deputies smelled marijuana and pulled the couple over. They were released from jail around 4 a.m. after posting $10,000 bail each. T.I.'s publicist declined to comment. The Atlanta-based rapper is the multi-platinum hitmaker known as the King of the South. He emerged as one of music's most profitable stars, also has a key role in the current top box office movie, Takers. Cottle, 36, sang with the 1990s group X-Scape and has recently been the star of a BET reality series, The Tiny and Toya Show. She and the rapper, who is the father of five, married in late July.
Okay, here's... I've just had the most brilliant idea. And I say that a lot, but here's the thing. Is about 50% of the time, it's just bupkis. But the other 50% of the time, it's true. And the idea...
Sorry,
would you like me to buy you some sort of a scratching implement, a
just
device?
My headphones are tight, and they squeeze my ears, and I scratch my head.
I don't think any of those...
I made a wincing face.
None of those three things you just said are related. my headphones are tight. My ears are squeezed. My head itches.
It all happened at the same time, which is why I made that face.
Okay.
I should be allowed to make a face. We're on the radio. No one can see.
It's
if you
not
didn't
really
say
about,
anything,
no
one would know.
It's not really about you making the face. I don't really care. I wonder if... I'm just wondering if you have... if there's some sort of a dermatological issue that I can help you with.
I'm having a seizure. I'm just having one of my little fits, as we call them.
Okay. It's just a seizure.
It's a spell.
It's a seizure that's just confined to the top of your scalp.
And as someone says in the text box, at least I'm not scratching my ass.
No, it's true. That is fair. Okay, but here's a fantastic idea.
That
somebody
you know of.
Somebody needs to do this. And if somebody could create this or the market this properly, I mean, this is money in the bank. Now, Rick Emerson is not suggesting that you break the law or that you flout any of the existing drug regulations. Drugs are a scourge that defile the body that Jesus blessed you with, and you should treat it accordingly. You should respect it. That notwithstanding, what someone needs to create is a kind of weed that doesn't have any smell to it. Because how many times do we read a story where it's like, police detected the odor of marijuana, and then they found a body in the trunk? Isn't that the thing with Paris Hilton, where the cop smelled weed, and then he was looking, and he saw the, quote, vapor trail, and they found the coke or whatever in her purse, allegedly?
Or make some kind of, like, of a little device, like those smokeless ashtrays that suck the smoke down into the ashtray.
Or one of those electronic cigarettes that they sell, which, by the way, let me ask you this. Did we not have a story the other day that those were illegal? That they've been banned in Oregon?
They're
at Lloyd Center, there is a kiosk selling electronic cigarettes.
They were banned in somewhere, but I don't think they were being banned in Oregon.
I was almost positive they were banned in Oregon.
I'm not sure what was going on with them.
Because I had that whole thing about when I bought Sarah one, and I was wondering if it was going to be illegal retroactively, like if it was just that you couldn't import them or if it was illegal to use one. There's a kiosk at Lloyd Center with a bunch of very youngish-looking customers, by the way, is gathering by the... Somebody needs to create, like, the e-cigarette, but like an e-joint or something.
Yeah.
Or just a kind of marijuana that just does not emit any noticeable scent, or that just smells like something else, like violets.
Some kind of device for doing it that will not, you know, involve... You know,
okay.
Exposing it to the elements.
Here's what we need to do. You and I need to create some sort of a device that has some plausible other purpose. That's
right.
The key to selling weed stuff.
Well, if you get anything you're selling that has to do with marijuana, you can always just say it's for cigarettes.
Now, do you have to have...
This is so that you could smoke cigarettes somewhere where you don't want to offend people with your secondhand smoke.
Now, do you have to be... Does that subject to any kind of regulation? In other words, if it's not actually tobacco or a cigarette, if it's just an accessory for cigarettes, you don't have to be regulated to sell that, right?
No.
So we could created and invented, patented right now.
That's right.
That's why
there are all these shops that say they sell accessories.
Tobacco accessories. I'm just wondering, but there's no law about where you can sell tobacco accessories.
There are in some places. Some places have laws that if they determine something can be used.
All right.
With a drug that, blah, blah, blah.
I'm just saying,
blah,
we play our cards right.
Yeah.
If we hook up at the right of it, we could be gone from this job in
we
a year.
Could.
I could be sitting on the sands of Maui.
Do we have any chemist friends, someone or botanist friends, somebody we can get on the whole smokeless weed thing, too?
I think we do. All right. Rick Emerson's going to look. But it's not for smokeless weed. It's for tobacco, Dawn, from now on.
Yeah, smokeless.
This is going to be like one of those early.
Smell-free tobacco.
It's going to be like one of those early Napster.com memos they found. And we can use it to trade pirated songs. It's awesome. By the way, you are listening to Legion of News right here, PDX.FM. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up at 1 o'clock. And this very fine radio program, Legion of News, is available via iTunes. Also at legionofnews.com and at PDX.FM in archived form. You can also get it on your handheld device at mobile.pdx.fm. This program is made possible in part by The Cleaning Solution. That is a locally owned and operated Portland business. And we often talk a lot about how The Cleaning Solution will come to your house, or come to your residence, and they'll make it look more respectable by cleaning, you know, your carpet, your rugs, or your, you know, if you got like the hardwood floor or the tile, whatever it is you might walk on. But they do businesses as well. And a lot of his business does come from local businesses, comes from companies. So, and that's a thing too, where I mean, I'm not saying that this happens to you, but let's say if you share some sort of a business space with a couple of alcohol enthusiasts who maybe as the week goes on seem to spill more and more of their consumptible wares onto the floor. Or maybe if they're just in a studio where there's like a 20-year-old bottle of Kahlua that seems to seems to diminish in amount with every passing day, and that I'm sure coincidentally there's a number of dark brown splotches that have appeared on the carpet. Mm. And maybe you're worried that at some point, should you ever move to a different office in the same building or a different building altogether, you might not get your security deposit back. Not that any of these things are concerns for you. You might want to contact Michael Beatty at The Cleaning Solution, 971-533-3211. He does stain removal, carpet repairs. He works on upholstery, stone, marble, tile, anything like that. And he also does regular maintenance programs. So once the things are clean looking, they stay clean forevermore. He can put you on a regular program so that your carpet stays looking just as good as he gets it looking. 971-533-3211, The Cleaning Solution. That is Michael Beatty. This is Dawn Taylor.
Although Matthew Perry is best known as Chandler Bing from Friends, the actor says he has realized he doesn't have to be completely on 100% of the time. His upcoming ABC series, Mr. Sunshine, centers on a sports area manager. A sports area manager? I think that's probably supposed
arena.
To say arena.
Yeah.
Sports. Did you type this?
Yes.
Sports arena manager in San Diego who suffers a midlife crisis, and the project is partly inspired by Perry's own personal journey. Perry gives his thoughts. So does that mean that the guy... So midlife crisis is like an analog for pill problem?
I believe so. For being a junkie, yes.
And the project is part... Perry gives his thoughts on being the guy with all the jokes.
No. The sense of humor has definitely served me well, and it's a good...
Yes.
Have some more Percocet.
Be funny and hear people laugh.
Wow.
And that stuff. What I've worked on now, subsequent to that, is not feeling the need to do that when I'm home. But being at work, that's sort of really fun. But I don't act like that when I'm at home anymore. But that's what it was. It was that. It was changing.
I have no idea what question he is answering.
I'm a jokey guy in real life, and I do a lot less of that.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
So if you're watching TV tonight, it is Thursday, so there is a new episode of Futurama on Comedy Central.
Did you watch, now have you seen last week's episode of Futurama? Are you always like a week behind with it?
At this point, I'm like two weeks behind, I think.
I have to tell you, and I've been saying this every week because that show is on such a roll. The episode from, and I believe it was from last week, and it is called... Irreconcilable Differences, because it is centered on Lur of the planet Omicron Persei 8, who is my favorite Futurama character.
And I am a friend of Maurice LaMarche on Facebook, so he was talking about this episode and how proud he was of it.
I'm
looking forward to it.
It's goddamn awesome. I'm not giving any spoilers away.
Because the voice of Lur.
I got to tell you that Lara and I are big nerds for Futurama, and she and I actually just independent of one another. It's not like I have a couple's mandate or something. But she and I both latched onto Lur and Nind, his wife, as our favorite characters. And in fact, would you like to know just a really like gay couple-y thing that we do?
Oh God, yes.
That is simultaneously revolting and. And I think kind of awesome.
Okay.
So you know how, like, you know, couples develop their... Well, we've talked about this. Couples develop their own sort of lexicon. And your little cutesy couple words or phrases or just, like, little pet things you say to each other. So, you know, in Annie Hall, there's that whole thing where he's talking about love isn't a strong enough word. He goes, love isn't... It's not enough for what I feel. It's too intense for the word love. I need to say another word. Like, I love you or I love you or I... Love just doesn't... You know, and he's talking about needing an alternate word. So Laura and I early on latched onto the whole... The love thing from Annie Hall. But now, in fact, we will, in fact, leave notes saying that we love each other. And it's like a Futurama thing. Mm-hmm. Which I realize is like sickeningly, cloyingly sweet, but there's just no getting around it.
A little schmoopy.
It is. I mean, there's just, I'm not going to lie, though. We're just dorks. But so it's a whole thing where Lur and Ninda split up because he has a midlife crisis, which is prompted by an incident that takes place at Comic-Con. And there are two jokes, one involving J.J. Abrams, and then there is the most inside Shatner reference that I have seen on television in a long, long time. And you'll know it when you see it. So you got to watch it. It's a really, last week's Futurama, I cannot recommend it strongly enough. It's fantastic. So.
Well, I believe we're done not only with the entertainment news, but with the show itself.
Damn it, I was. We were just getting onto a roll there, Don.
I know. It's
cruel fate.
If only we had another whole show we could go do for an hour and a half or 2 hours and keep talking to each other.
That is just crazy enough to work. Coming up at 1 o'clock, which is, and that's a lie, by the way. When I say coming at 1 o'clock, really, it's we end the show at 1. We start the other show like 10, 12 after. We've been trying to get it, trying to limit the changeover time to like 10 minutes. So what happens is if you're listening to the RickEmerson.com stream, we end the show, and then there's like 10 minutes of musical stylings. We've been kind of on a Sinatra kick lately. So then we kick on the show around 10 minutes after. So Legion of News, of course, is brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.FM and originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff is Cheryl Kennecoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at RickEmerson.com. This, however, has been another exciting installment of
Legion of News on PDX.FM.